one. In for a penny, in for a pound. Ah, ha, ha. Damn, I'm clever. Footsteps sounded brisk and precise, and Lucio walked into view beside Guard. There was a subtle difference in Guard's body language toward Lucio, something a shade more respectful than was there before. The captain of the wardens was wiping her sword clean on her gray cloak. Blood wouldn't stain it, which made it handy for such things. Lucio paused for a moment upon seeing me, her expression carefully guarded, then nodded. "Warden, how are you feeling?"
"I'll live," I rasped. "What happened?"
"Two denarians," Guard replied. She nodded her head briefly to Lucio. "Both dead." Lucio shook her head. "They'd been half-drowned," she said. "I only finished them off. I shouldn't have liked to fight them fresh."
"Take me to the bodies," I said quietly. "Hurry."
There was a sighing sound from behind us. I didn't freak out about it this time, but Murphy did, her gun appearing in her hand. To be fair, Lucio had her sword half out of its sheath, too. I checked and found what I'd more or less expected. The body of the former denarian, relieved of its coin, was decomposing with unnatural speed, even in the cold water. The fallen angel in the coin might have been holding off the ravages of time, but the old man with the hourglass is patient, and he was collecting his due from the fallen denarian with compounded interest.
"Captain, we've got to get every single coin we possibly can, and we've got to do it now."
Lucio cocked her head at me.
"Why?"
"Look, I don't know what arrangements Kincaid made, but somebody's going to notice something soon, and then emergency services will be all over this place. I don't want some poor fireman or cop accidentally picking up one of those things."
"True enough," she said, nodding, and then glanced at Murphy. "Sergeant, do you concur?"
Murphy grimaced.
"Damn it, there's always something."
She held up her hands as if pushing away a blanket that was wrapped too tightly around her and said,
"Yes, yes, round them up."
"Michael," I said, "Sonya?"
"When we got here," Murphy said, "a bunch of those things were pulling you out of the water."
"They ran. We went different directions pursuing them," Guard supplied.
"Where's Cujo?" I asked.
Guard gave me a blank look.
"Hendricks."
"Ah," she said.
"Look out. He'll give us a warning when the authorities begin to arrive." At least someone was thinking like a criminal. I suppose she was the right person for the job. I raised my voice as much as I could. It came out sort of furry and rough.
"Michael?"
"Here," came the answer. He came walking around the curving path toward us a few moments later, wearing only his undershirt beneath his heavy denim jacket. I hadn't seen him wearing that little before. Michael had some serious pecs. Maybe I should work out. He was carrying part of his blue and white denim shirt folded into a careful bundle in front of him with both hands. Sonya came along behind Michael, soaking wet, his chest bare underneath his coat. Never mind Michael's pecs. Sonya made us both look like we needed to eat more wheat germ or something. He was carrying Esperacius and Amarachius over one shoulder, and Kincaid over the other. Kincaid wasn't moving much, though he was clearly trying to support some of his weight. His skin was chalk white. He was covered in blood. The rest of Michael's shirt and both of Sonya's had been pressed into service as emergency bandages, and layers of duct tape had been wrapped around and around them, sealing them into place around both arms, over his belly, and around one leg. Murphy hissed and went over to him, her voice raw.
"Jared."
"Jared? Huh."
"Dresden,"
Kincaid gasped.
"Dresden."
They laid him down, and I shambled over. I managed not to fall down on him as I knelt beside him. I'd seen him wounded before, but it hadn't been as bad as this. He'd used the tape the same way, though. I checked. Sure enough, there was a roll of tape hanging from a loop on Kincaid's equipment harness.
"Just like the vampire lair," I said quietly.
"No claymores here," Kincaid said.
"Should have had claymores."
He shook his head and blinked his eyes a couple of times, trying to focus them.
"Dresden. Not much time. The girl. They got out with her. She's alive.
I grimaced and looked away. His bloody hand shot out and seized the front of my coat.
Look at me,
I did. I expected rage, hate, and blame. All I got was a look of just desperate, desperate fear.
Go after them. Bring her back. Save her.
Kincaid, I said softly.
Swear it,
he said. His eyes went out of focus for a second, then glittered coldly.
Swear it, or I'm coming for you. Swear it to me, Dresden.
I'm too damn tired to be scared of you, I said. Kincaid closed his eyes.
She doesn't have anybody else. No one.
Murphy knelt down by Kincaid across from me. She stared at me for a moment and said quietly, Jared, rest. He's going to help her. I traded a faint, tired smile with Murphy. She knows me.
But,
Kincaid began. She leaned down and kissed his forehead, blood and all. Hush. I promise. Kincaid subsided, or passed out. One of the two. Dresden, get out of the way, guard said, in a patient voice. Don't tell me you're a doctor, I said. I've seen more battlefield injuries than any bonesaw-flourishing mortal hack, guard said. Move. Harry, Murph said, her voice tight. Please. I creaked to my feet and shambled over to Michael and Sonya, who stood looking out at the dolphins and the little whales in the big pool. The water level had dropped 7 or 8 feet, and the residents were giving the newly inundated area of the pool a wide berth. If the presence of the rotting thing behind me made the water feel anything like the air was starting to smell, I couldn't blame them. He looks pretty bad, I told them. Michael shook his head, his eyes distant. It isn't his time yet. I spocked an eyebrow and gave him a look. Sonya gave him one very nearly as dubious as mine. Michael glanced at me and then back out at the water. I asked. I said quietly. Sonya smiled faintly and shook his head. I glanced at him. Still agnostic, huh? Some things I'm willing to take on faith, Sonya said with a shrug. Lucio took down 2, I told Michael. What's the count? I didn't need to be any more specific than that. Sonya's grin broadened. That is the good news. I turned to face Sonya. Those assholes just carried off a child that they planned to torture into accepting a fallen angel, I said quietly. There isn't any good news. The big Russian's expression sobered. Good is where you find it, he said seriously. 11, Michael said quietly. I blinked at him. What? 11, he replied. 11 of them fell here today. Judging from the wounds, Kincaid killed 5 of them. Captain Lucio killed 2 more. Sonya and I caught a pair on the way out. One of them was carrying a bag with the coins of those who had already fallen. We found the coin of Aramvio, which we knew would be in possession of a victim, Sonya said. But we were short by 1 body. That one was mine, I said. He's tiny pieces of soot and ash now, and that only brings us to 10. 1 more drowned when the tank collapsed, Michael said. They're floating down there. 11 of them, Harry. He shook his head. 11. Do you realize what this means? That if we whack 1 more, we get the complimentary steak knives? He turned to me, his eyes intent and bright. Tessa escaped with only 4 other members of her retinue, and Nicodemus was nowhere to be found. We have recovered 13 coins already, and 11 more today, assuming we can find them all. Only 6 coins remain free to do harm, Sonya said. Only 6. Those 6 are the last, and they are all here in Chicago, together. The fallen in the coins have been waging a war for the minds and lives of mankind for 2,000 years, Harry, Michael said. And we have fought them. That war could end. It could all be over. He turned back to the pool and shook his head, his expression that of a man baffled
could go to Alicia's softball games, teach little Harry to ride a bicycle. I could build houses, Harry. The longing in his voice was so thick, I could practically feel it brushing against my face. Let's round up the coins and get out of here before the flashing lights show up, I said quietly. Michael, open up the bundle. He frowned at me, but did, revealing discs of tarnished silver. I drew the pair of coins I'd found from my pocket with my gloved hand and added them to the pile. Thanks, I said. Let's get moving. I turned and walked away as Michael folded the cloth closed around the coins again, his eyes distant, presumably focused on some dream of shoving those coins down a deep, dark hole and living a boring, simple, normal life with his wife and kids. I let him have it while he could. I was going to have to take that dream away from him, damn it. Whether he wanted to go along with the idea or not. Chapter 35. I slept in the cab of Michael's truck, all the way back to his place, leaning against the passenger side window. Sonia had the middle seat. I was dimly aware that they were speaking quietly to each other on the way home, but their voices were just low rumbles, especially Sonia's, and I tuned them out until the truck crunched to a halt. It doesn't matter, Michael was saying in a patient voice. Sonia, we don't recruit members. We're not a chapter of the Masons. It's got to be a calling.
We act in the interests of God on a daily basis, Sonia said in a reasonable voice. If he is being slow to call a new wielder for a Philolochios, perhaps it is a subtle hint that he wishes us to take on the responsibility for ourselves. Don't you keep assuring me you are undecided on whether or not God exists? Michael asked. I am speaking to you in your idiom to make you comfortable, Sonia said. She would make a good knight.
Michael sighed. Perhaps the reason no new wielder has been called is because our task is nearly complete. Perhaps one isn't needed.
Sonia's voice turned dry. Yes, perhaps all evil, everywhere, is about to be destroyed forever, and there will be no more need for the strength to protect those who cannot protect themselves.
He sighed. Or perhaps, he began, glancing at me. He saw me blinking my eyes open and hurriedly said,
Dresden, how are you feeling? Nothing, a few days in a hospital, a new set of lungs, a keg of Max Dark, and a pair of feisty redheads couldn't cure, I mumbled.
I tried for Cavalier, but it came out a little flatter and darker than I'd meant it to.
I'll live.
Michael nodded and parked the truck.
When do we go after them?
We don't, I said quietly. They've developed some kind of stealth defense against being found or scryed upon magically.
Michael frowned. Are you sure?
I'm sure it's really hard to defeat someone you can't find, Michael. I rubbed at my eyes and all but slapped my own hand away. It hurt so much.
Ow! Stupid broken nose. Stupid Tessa tweaking it.
You need to get some sleep, Harry, Michael said quietly.
And perhaps a shower, Sonia suggested. You smell like dolphin water, too, big guy, I shot back. But not nearly so much, he said, and I didn't throw up on myself.
I glowered at him for a second. Isn't Sonia a girl's name?
Michael snorted. Get some sleep first, Harry.
After, I said. First things first. War council in the kitchen. And if someone doesn't make me a cup of coffee, I'm going to shimmy dry all over everything. Like Mouse.
Mouse is too polite to do that in my house, Michael said.
Like somebody else's dog, then, I said.
Crap, I forgot my staff. Michael swung out of the truck, reached into the bed of the pickup, and lifted my staff out of it. I got out and he tossed it to me across the back of the truck. I caught it in my left hand and nodded to him.
Bless you. It's a real pain to make one of these.
Way harder to carve out than...
I shook my head as my thoughts wandered off track. Sorry. Long day.
Get inside before you take a chill, Michael said quietly.
Good idea.
We trooped in. The others arrived over the next 20 minutes or so.
Guard had insisted on taking Kincaid by one of Marcone's buildings. Probably someplace where he kept medical supplies for those times when he didn't want the police wondering why his employees came in with gunshot or knife wounds. To my amusement, Murphy had insisted on accompanying Kincaid, which meant that the cops were about to learn the location of another of Marcone's secret stashes, maybe even the name of whatever doctor he had on his payroll. And since it was Murphy's car, and Murphy was with me, and Guard needed my help, there wasn't diddly Guard could do about it. That's my Murphy, manufacturing her own damn silver lining when the clouds didn't cough one up. Mouse was delighted to see me, and greeted me with much fond twitching and bumping against my legs and tail wagging. He, at least, thought I merely smelled interesting. Molly greeted us with only slightly less enthusiasm, and immediately set about making food for everyone. It turns out that Molly wasn't her mother's daughter in that respect. Charity was like the MacGyver of the kitchen. She could whip up a 5-course meal for 12 from an egg, 2 spaghetti noodles, some household chemicals, and a stick of chewing gum. Molly once burned my egg. My boiled egg. I don't know how. She could, however, make a mean cup of coffee. Once Kincaid had been settled down on the guest bed in Charity's sewing room, everyone else gathered in the kitchen. Murphy looked strained. I poured her a cup of Joe, and she came to stand next to me. I offered Lucio one as well. She accepted with a small, grateful nod. "How is he?" she asked Murphy. "Sleeping," Murphy said. "Guard got him some painkillers." I guzzled coffee, fighting off a round of chills.
"Okay, people, here's the situation. We are bent over, greased up, and Nicodemus and his crew are about to drive one of those Japanese bullet trains right up our collective ass."
The room went quiet.
"They took Ivy," I said. "That's bad."
"Harry," Murphy said, "I know I'm the new kid, but you're gonna have to explain this thing with the little girl to me again."
"Ivy is the archive," I said quietly. "A long time ago, we don't know when, somebody, we don't know who, created the archive, a kind of intellectual construct."
"What?"
Sonya asked. "A kind of entity composed of pure information. Think of it as software for the brain," Lucio said. "Like a very advanced database management system."
"Ah," Sonya said, nodding.
I arched an eyebrow at Lucio in surprise. She shrugged, smiling a little. "I like computers. I read all about them. It's my hobby, really. I understand the theory behind them."
"Right," I said.
"Okay. The archive is passed from one generation to the next, mother to daughter. All the memories of the previous bearers of the archive and all the facts they have gathered. All that knowledge makes the archive powerful. And it was created as a repository of learning, a safeguard against the possibility of a cataclysm of civilization, a loss of all knowledge, the destruction of all learning. It was bound to neutrality, to the preservation and gathering of knowledge."
"Gathering?" Murphy said. "So, the archive reads a lot?"
"It goes deeper than that," I said. "The archive is a magic so complex that it's practically alive, and it just knows. Anything that gets printed or written down, the archive knows."
Hendrix said a bad word.
"Sideways," I agreed. "That's what Nicky and the Nickelheads have taken."
"With that kind of information at their disposal," Murphy said, "they could, my God, they could blackmail officials, control governments."
"Launch nuclear warheads," I said. "Stop thinking so small."
I nodded at Michael. "Remember, you told me that Nicodemus was playing Armageddon Lotto. He makes big plans, but he plots them out so that he can make an incremental profit along the way. This was just one more scheme."
Michael frowned. "He was after the archive all along? He deliberately came here and provoked a confrontation to get you to call her in to arbitrate?"
"That isn't much of a plan," Lucio said. "You could have chosen any one of a dozen neutral arbiters."
Murphy snorted.
"But it's Dresden. He's lived in the same apartment since I first met him, drives the same car, drinks at the same little pub. Favorite restaurant is Burger King. He gets the same damn meal every time he goes there, too."
"He can't improve on perfection," I said.
That's why it's called perfection. And what's your point? You're a creature of habit, Harry. You don't like change.
There wasn't much use denying that. Even if I hadn't called Ivy, Nicodemus still could realize some gains. Maybe recruit Marcone. Maybe kill off Michael or Sonya. Maybe ditch some deadwood within his own organization. Who knows? The point is, I did call Ivy in, he did get the opportunity to take her down, and it paid off.
But the archive was created neutral, Sonya said. Constrained, you said so yourself.
The archive was, I said. But Ivy wasn't. And Ivy controls the archive. She's still a child. That child can be hurt, frightened, coerced, tempted. I rubbed at the spot between my eyes. They want to make her one of them, probably hoping to gobble up Marcone along the way.
God help us if they're taken, Murphy said quietly.
God help them if they're taken, Michael murmured. We have to find them, Harry.
Not even Mab could locate the Denarians with magic, I said. Guard, could your firm do any better?
She shook her head.
I glanced at Michael. I don't suppose anyone's drawn a big flashing arrow in the sky for you two to see.
Michael shook his head, his expression sober.
I looked.
Okay, then. Barring divine intervention, we have no way of finding them.
I took a deep breath.
So, we're going to make them find us. That would be a good trick if we could do it, Sonya said. What did you have in mind?
Hendrix lifted his head suddenly.
Coins!
Everyone turned to stare at him.
Hendrix counted on his fingers for a second.
They only got 6, and 6 people. So how are they going to get the creepy little girl a coin? Or one for the boss?
Good thinking, Cujo, I said. It'll only hurt for a minute. But we've got to move fast and make it work. Nicodemus can't afford to throw away any more manpower, but his conscience won't hesitate for one itty-bitty second to kill one of his own people for their coin, if it comes to that. So we're going to offer him a trade. 11 old nickels in exchange for the girl.
Michael and Sonya both came to their feet in an instant, speaking loudly and in 2 different languages. It was hard to make out individual words, but the gestalt of their protest amounted to,
"Are you out of your mind?" "Damn it all, Michael," I said, swinging around to face him, thrusting out my jaw. "If Nicodemus manages to take the archive, it won't matter how many of the damn coins you have locked away."
Silence. The clock on the entry wall ticked very loudly. I didn't back down.
Right now, 6 demons are torturing an 11-year-old girl. The same way they tortured me. The same way they tortured Shiro.
Michael flinched.
Look me in the eye, I told him, and tell me you think that we should let that girl suffer when we have the means to save her.
Tick tock. Tick tock. Michael shook his head.
Sonya subsided, sinking back to lean against a cabinet again, his expression pensive and solemn.
Nicodemus will never accept that trade, Michael said quietly.
Lucio smiled, showing a lot of teeth.
Of course he will. Why sacrifice a useful retainer when he can show up for the exchange, double-cross us, steal the coins, and keep the archive?
Bingo, I said. And we'll be ready for him.
Captain, do you know how to contact him through the channels outlined in the Accords?
Yes, she said.
Harry, Michael said gently. We're taking a terrible risk.
He and Lucio exchanged a glance, pregnant with silence, swayed by deep undercurrents.
At this point, Lucio said, the only riskier thing we can do is,
she shrugged and spread her hands,
nothing.
Michael grimaced and crossed himself.
God be with us. Amen, Sonya said, winking over Michael's shoulder at me.
Call Nicodemus, I said. Tell him I want to make a deal.
Chapter 36. It takes time to go through channels. The last thing I wanted to do was get wet again, and I was still freezing and shaky. And as it turns out, there are a number of other inconvenient and unpleasant side effects to accidentally gulping down gallons of salt water. It's the little things that get to you the most. It took me a couple of hours to get my system straightened out, get showered, and get horizontal. and by the time I finally did it, I was so tired I could barely focus my eyes. Molly was committing dinner by that time, aided and abetted by Sonya, who seemed to take some kind of grim Russian delight in watching train wrecks in progress. I fell down on the couch to debate whether or not I wanted to risk putting anything else in the pipes, and Rip Van Winkled my way right through the danger. I didn't want to wake up. I was having a dream where I wasn't hurt, and no one was kicking me around. The walls were white and smooth and clean, lit only by frosty moonlight, and someone with a gentle voice was speaking quietly to me. But my right hand had broken into fierce tingling, all pins and needles, and sleep began to retreat. I started to wake slowly. Voices murmured in the room.
"Can she possibly be sure?" Murphy demanded in a heated whisper.
"It isn't my area of knowledge," Michael rumbled back. "Ma'am?"
Lucio's tone was cautious.
"It's a delicate area of the art," she said, "but the girl does have a gift. Then we need to say something."
"You can't," Molly said, her tone quiet and sad. "It wouldn't help. It might make things worse."
"And you know that?" Murphy demanded. "You know that for a fact?"
I was so tired, I probably missed a sentence or three in there. I blinked my eyes open and said muzzily,
"The kid knows what she's talking about."
I fumbled about and found Mouse lying on the floor beside the couch, immediately under my arm. I decided sitting up could wait for a minute.
"What are we talking about?"
Molly gave Murphy a look that said, "There, see?" Murphy shook her head and said,
"I'm gonna see if Kincaid is awake yet."
She left, her expression set in stony displeasure. Mouse set about industriously licking my right hand, a canine grooming ritual he sometimes pursued. It broke up the pins and needles a bit, so I didn't argue. I still had no idea what was up with my hand. I'd never heard of anything like this happening to anyone. But it wasn't terribly uncomfortable, and all things considered, it wasn't anywhere near the top of my priority list at the moment. Nobody answered my question, though. The silence got awkward. I coughed uncomfortably.
anyone know what time it is?
Almost midnight, Lucio said quietly. I waited for a minute, but apparently no one was going to do me a favor and knock me unconscious again, so I did my best to ignore the aches and pains and sat up.
"What's the word from Nicodemus?"
"He hasn't returned our call," Lucio said.
"Not really a surprise," I muttered, raking my fingers through my hair.
I'd gone to sleep wearing one of Michael's old pairs of sweats and one of his t-shirts, so my ankles stuck way out, and both shirt and sweats fit me as well as a tent.
"Whatever they're doing to keep Ivy restrained, it's gotta be pretty elaborate. I'd hold my calls until I was sure it was solid, too."
"As would I," Lucio agreed.
"Is she really that dangerous?" Michael asked.
"Yes," Lucio said calmly. "The Council regards her as a significant power in her own right, on par with the youngest queens of the She-Courts.
If anything, I think that profile in the Warden's files underestimates her," I said quietly.
"She had barely anything to work with, and she was making Tessa and her crew look like pygmies trying to capture an elephant. If she hadn't been cut off so entirely, I think she would have eaten them alive." Lucio frowned, disturbed.
"Truly?"
"You had to have seen it," I said.
"I've never seen anyone. You had to have seen it."
"If she's that powerful," Michael said quietly, "can she be contained?"
"Oh, yes," I said, "absolutely. But it would take a greater circle, heavy-duty ritual stuff in a prepared location. And it would have to be freaking flawless, or she could break it."
Molly screwed up her face in distress.
"She won't. Won't take one of the coins, will she?"
She glanced back and forth between Lucio and me and shrugged a little.
"Because it would be bad if she did."
I looked at Michael. "The Fallen can't just jump in and overwhelm someone, can they? Outright non-consensual possession?"
"Not normally," Michael replied.
"There are circumstances that can change that, though. Mentally damaged people can be susceptible to it. Other things can open a spirit to possession. Drugs, involvement with dark rituals, extended deliberate contact with spiritual entities, a few other things."
"Drugs," I said tiredly. "Jesus."
Michael winced. "Sorry."
Even if a soul is made vulnerable to assault, Michael said, the mind and will can fight against an invasive spirit. Surely the archive qualifies as a formidable mind and will.
Sure, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Ivy does. Since she was born, she's been the archive. She's never had a chance to develop her own mind, her own personality.
I stood up, shaking my head, and started to pace restlessly around the room. She's going to be helpless, probably for the first time since she could walk. Alone, scared, I looked at Michael. You think that those people won't know how to terrify a little girl? He grimaced and bowed his head. And then along comes the Fallen and tells her how it can help her, how it wants to be her friend, how it can make the bad people stop hurting her. I shook my head and clenched my hands. Maybe she'll know the facts, but those facts aren't going to be much comfort to her. They aren't going to feel true. I blinked and looked at Michael, then Molly. Then I stormed past them into the kitchen and grabbed the pad of paper Charity kept stuck to the fridge with a magnet to use to make grocery lists. I found a pencil on top of the fridge and sat down at the kitchen table, writing furiously. Ivy, you are not alone. Kincaid is alive. I'm all right. We're coming after you. Don't listen to them. Hang on. We're coming. You are not alone. Harry.
Oh, said Molly, reading over my shoulder. That's clever. If it works, Lucio said, will she know it?
I don't know, I said, but I don't know what else I can do. I rubbed at my forehead. Is there any food?
I made pot roast, Molly said. But is there any food?
She swatted me on the back of the head, though not too hard, and went to the refrigerator. I made a sandwich out of things. I'm an American. We can eat anything as long as it's between two pieces of bread. With enough mustard, I almost couldn't taste the roast. For a few minutes, I paid attention to eating and was hungry enough to actually enjoy part of the experience, the part where Molly's pot roast finally terrified my growling stomach into silence. The phone rang. Michael answered. He listened for a moment and then said gently, "It isn't too late to seek redemption, not even for you." Someone laughed merrily on the other end of the phone. "Just a moment," Michael said a breath later. He turned, holding his hand over the phone, and said, "Harry." "Him," I said. Michael nodded. I went to the phone and took it from him.
"Dresden."
"I'm impressed, Dresden," Nicodemus said. "I expected the Hellhound to make a good showing, of course, but you surprised me. Your skills are developing quite rapidly. Tessa is furious with you."
"I'm tired," I replied. "Do you want to talk deal or not?"
"I wouldn't have called otherwise," Nicodemus replied. "But let's keep this a bit simpler, shall we? Just you and me. I have no desire to drag Chicago's underworld or the rest of the White Council into this ugly little affair. Mutually guaranteed safe passage, of course."
"We did that once," I said.
"And despite the fact that you betrayed the neutrality of the meeting well before I or any of my people took action, which I take as a highly promising act on your part, I am willing to extend my trust to you once more." I bit out a little laugh.
"Yeah, you're a saint."
"One day," Nicodemus said, "one day. But for now, let's say a face-to-face meeting, a talk, just you and I."
"So you and your posse can jump me alone? No thanks."
"Come now. As you say, I do want to talk deal. If you're willing to extend your word of safe passage, we can even have it on your own ground."
"Oh?" I asked. "And where would that be?"
"It doesn't matter to me. As long as I don't have to be seen with you while you're wearing that ridiculous borrowed ensemble." The hairs on the back of my neck started crawling up into my hairline. I turned my head around very slightly. The windows to the carpenter's backyard had blinds and curtains, but neither was wholly drawn. The kitchen light made the windows into mirrors. I couldn't see beyond them.
"What's it going to be, Dresden?" Nicodemus asked. "Will you give me your word of safe passage for our talk? Or shall I have my men open fire on that lovely young lady at the kitchen sink?"
I glanced over my shoulder to where Molly was drying dishes.
She watched me out of the corner of her eye, clearly interested in the discussion but trying not to look like it. I couldn't possibly warn anyone before Nick's men could open fire, and I believed that he had them there, probably up in the treehouse. It had a reasonably good view of the kitchen.
All right, I said, speaking so that everyone there could hear me. I'm giving you my word of safe passage for 10 minutes.
And hope to die? Nicodemus prompted. I gritted my teeth. At the rate we're going, someone will. He laughed again.
Keep the subject matter of this conversation between you and I, and it won't have to be anyone in the kitchen.
The phone disconnected. A beat later, someone knocked at the front door.
Mouse's growl rumbled through the whole house, even though he'd remained in the front room.
Harry? Michael asked.
I found my shoes and stuffed my bare feet into them.
I'm going out to talk to him.
Keep an eye on us, but don't do anything if he doesn't start it. And watch your back. The last chat with him was a distraction.
I stood up, pulled on my duster, and picked up my staff. I met Michael's eyes and said, "Watch your back." Michael's head tilted slightly. Then he looked past me to the windows to the backyard.
Be careful.
I took my shield bracelet out of my duster pocket and fastened it on, wincing as it went over the mild burns on my wrist.
You know me, Michael. I'm always careful.
I walked to the front door and looked out the window. The lights on the street were all out, except for the streetlight in front of Michael's house. Nicodemus stood in the center of the street outside. His shadow stretched out long and dark to one side of him, the side opposite the one it should have been on, given the position of the light. Mouse came to my side and planted himself there firmly. I rested my hand on my dog's thick neck for a moment, searching the darkness outside for anything or anyone else. I saw nothing, which meant nothing, really. Anything could be out there in the dark. But the only thing I knew was out there was a scared little girl.
Let's go, I said to Mouse, and stalked out into the snow.
Chapter 37. It was snowing again. 5 or 6 inches had fallen since the last time anyone cleared the carpenter's front walk. My footsteps crunched through the silent winter air. You could have heard them a block away. Nicodemus waited for me, stylishly casual in a deep green silk shirt and black trousers. He watched me come with a neutral expression, his eyes narrowed. I shivered when a breath of cold wind touched me, and my weary muscles threatened to go out of control. Damn it, I was the one working for the Winter Queen. So how come everyone else got to be perfectly comfortable in the middle of a blizzard? I stopped at the end of Michael's driveway and planted my staff on the ground. Nicodemus stared silently at me for a while. The shadows had shifted to mask his expression, and I couldn't see his face very well.
What, he said in a low, deadly tone, is that?
Mouse stared at Nicodemus and let out a growl so low that individual snowflakes jumped up off the ground all around him. My dog bared his teeth, showing long white fangs, and his snarl rose in volume.
Hell, bells. I never seen Mouse react like that, except in earnest combat.
And it looked like Nicodemus didn't like Mouse much either.
Answer my question, Dresden, Nicodemus growled. What is that?
A precaution against getting stuck in deep snow, I said. He's training to be a Saint Bernard.
Excuse me, Nicodemus said.
I mimed covering one of Mouse's ears with my hand and stage whispered,
Don't tell him that they don't actually carry kegs of booze on their collar. Break his little heart.
Nicodemus didn't move, but his shadow shifted until it lay in a shapeless little pool between him and Mouse. His face came into view again, and he was smiling.
It's been a little while since anyone was quite that insolent to my face. May I ask you a question?
Why not?
Do you always retreat into insouciance when you're frightened, Dresden?
I don't think of it as retreating. I think of it as an advance to the cheer.
May I ask you a question?
The smile widened.
Oh, why not?
How come some of you losers seem to have personal names, and the others just get called after the fallen in the coin?
It isn't complicated, Nicodemus said. Some of our order are active, willing minds, with strength enough to retain their sense of self. Others are... He shrugged a shoulder, an elegant, arrogant little motion. Of little consequence. Disposable vessels, and nothing more.
Like Rasmussen, I muttered. Nicodemus looked puzzled for a moment. Then his eyes narrowed suddenly, focusing intently upon me.
His shadow stirred again, and something made a noise that sounded like a disturbingly serpentine whisper.
Oh, yes. Urciel's vessel. Precisely.
He looked past me to the house.
Have your friends begun whispering behind your back yet?
They sure as hell had, though I had no idea why. I hung on to my poker face.
Why would they?
Try to imagine the aquarium from their point of view. They enter a building with you, along with someone they would not normally bring along, but you have insisted that the police detective accompany your group. As a result, you walk away to a private conference with just you, me, and the archive's guard dog. Then the sign goes up, and they can hear a terrible conflict raging. They race to the scene as quickly as possible and find my people dragging you out of the water to take back the coin you had in your pocket. But your friends had no way of knowing that. They find the archive gone, her bodyguard wounded or dead, and you being apparently assisted by my people. And they never saw what happened, Nicodemus continued. To a suspicious mind, you might seem an accomplice to the act.
I swallowed. I doubt that.
Oh, Nicodemus said. Even though you're about to propose giving me back the coins you took at the aquarium?
11 coins, Dresden.
Should I recover them, everything you and your people have done during the past few days will mean nothing. I'll be just as strong and possess the power of the archive to boot.
It is hardly a stretch to consider that you would be ideally positioned to betray them at a critical moment, which this is.
I hadn't thought of it like that.
What if he's finally falling to the influence of her shadow, they're thinking. What if he's not wholly in control of his own decisions, they're thinking.
Treachery is a more dangerous weapon than any magic, Dresden. I've had 2,000 years to practice arranging it, and your friends, the knights, know it.
Suddenly, Michael's attitude began to make a lot more sense, and the pot roast fought to come back up. I tried to keep my poker face, but it wouldn't stick.
Ouch, Nicodemus said, his eyes widening. After all those years of baseless suspicion and hostility from your own council, that must be a painful realization. He smirked at Mouse and then at me.
Your little heart must be breaking.
Mouse pressed his shoulder against my leg and snarled savagely at Nicodemus, taking a step forward. Nicodemus ignored him, his focus all on me.
It's a tempting offer, he said. Exchanging the coins for the archive, presenting me with an opportunity to walk away with every jewel in the vault, it's something I can hardly ignore.
Well done.
So, I said, where do you want to set it up?
He shook his head. I don't, he said quietly. This is endgame, Dresden, even if you and yours can't accept it. Once I have the archive, the rest is simply an exercise. Losing the coins will hurt, true, but I don't need them. Thorned Namshiel is of no real use to me in his current condition, and I haven't worked for 2,000 years only to take a gamble at the last second. No deal.
I swallowed.
Then why are you here?
To give you a chance to reconsider, Nicodemus said. I think you and I are not so very different. Both of us are creatures of will. Both of us live our lives for ideals, not material things. Both of us are willing to sacrifice to attain our goals.
Maybe we should wear matching outfits. He spread his hands.
I could be an ally far more effective and dangerous than any you have now. I'm willing to compromise with you and make some of your goals my own. I can provide you with support beyond anything your own council has ever done for you.
The material gain of such a partnership is a passing matter, ultimately. But wouldn't you enjoy living in something other than a musty basement? Don't you get tired of coming home to cold showers, cheap food, and an empty bed? I just stared at him. A great deal of work needs to be done, and not all of it is repugnant to you. In fact, I should imagine that some of it would prove to be quite satisfying to your personal sense of right and wrong. To hell with the poker face, I sneered at him.
Like what?
The Red Court is one example, Nicodemus said. They're large, well-organized, dangerous to my plans, a plague upon mankind, and aesthetically repugnant. They're parasites, who are inconvenient in the short term, dangerous in the middle distance, and fatal to any long-range plan. They need to be destroyed at some point, in any case. I should have no objection to giving my assistance to you, and through you, to the White Council in their efforts to do so.
Make the Council into cat's paws to wipe out the Red Court? I asked.
As if you have not been made into their tool on many occasions. The Council doesn't need my help to be a bunch of tools, I muttered. And yet, the reversal appeals to your sense of justice, as does the notion of visiting destruction upon the Red Court, especially given what they did to Susan Rodriguez. He tilted his head to one side. It may be possible to help her, you know. If anyone might know of a means to free her of her condition, it is the Fallen.
Why not just offer me floating castles and world peace while you're at it, Nick?
He spread his hands. I only suggest possibilities. Here is what is concrete. You and I share a great many foes. I am willing to help you fight them.
Let me get this straight, I said. You're telling me that you want me to work with you, and that I still get to keep being one of the good guys.
Good and evil are relative. You know that by now. But I would never ask you to work against your conscience. I have no need to do so in order to make use of your talents. Consider how many people you could help with the power I'm offering you.
Yeah, you seem like a real philanthropist.
As I said, I'm willing to work with you, and I am quite sincere. He met my eyes. Look upon my soul, Dresden. See for yourself. My heart ripped out about 1,000 beats in 2 seconds, and I jerked my eyes away from him, terrified. I didn't want to see what was behind Nicodemus's dark, calm, ancient eyes. It could have been something monstrous, his soul. Something that ripped away my sanity and left a stain of itself on my own like a smear of grease. Or it could be even worse. What if he was telling the truth? I glanced back at the carpenter house, feeling very cold and very tired. Tired of everything. Tired of all of it. I looked down at my borrowed clothes and my bare ankles, covered with snow just like my shoes. I don't have anything against you, personally, Dresden, he said. I respect your integrity. I would enjoy working with you. But make no mistake. If you stand in my way, I'll mow you down beside everyone else. Silence reigned. I thought about what I knew of Nicodemus. I thought about my friends and those whispers behind my back. I thought about the awkward silences. I thought about what the world might become if Nicodemus turned Ivy. I thought about how scared the little girl must be right now. And I thought about a little old man from Okinawa who had literally laid down his life for my own. You and I said quietly, are both willing to give things up to reach our goals. Nicodemus tilted his head, waiting. But we have real different ideas when it comes to deciding who does the sacrificing and who gets sacrificed. I shook my head. No. He took a slow, deep breath and said,
pity. Good evening, Dresden. Best of luck to you in the new world. But I expect we won't meet again in this life.
He turned to go, and my heart sped up again.
Shiro said I would know who to give the sword to.
Wait, I said. Nicodemus paused. I've got more than coins to offer you.
He turned, his face a mask.
You give me Ivy, and I give you 11 coins, I said quietly, plus Phidolachius.
Nicodemus froze. His shadow twisted and twitched. You have it?
Yeah. That ugly whispering sound came again, louder and faster. Nicodemus glanced down at his shadow, frowning.
Suppose you get Ivy, I said. Suppose you turn her and manage to control her. It's a great scheme. Suppose you get your apocalypse in your neo-dark age.
Do you think that's going to stop the knights? Do you think that one after the other, new men and women won't take up the swords and fight you? You think heaven's just going to sit there letting you do whatever you want?
Nicodemus had a better poker face than me, but I had him. He was listening.
How many times have the swords broken up your plans? I asked. How many times have they forced you to abandon one position or another? I took a stab in the dark that seemed worth it. Don't you get tired of waking up from nightmares about taking a sword through the heart? Or the neck? Turning you into one more discarded Dixie cup for the fallen? Terrified of what you're going to face once you shuffle off the mortal coil?
I've got the sword, I said. I'm willing to trade it and the coins alike.
His teeth showed. No, you aren't.
I'm just as willing to give you the sword and the coins as you are to give me the archive, I said. I'm handing you an opportunity, Nick, a chance to destroy one of the swords forever. Who knows? If things go well, you might have a shot at taking out the other two at the same time.
The whispering increased in volume and speed again. Nicodemus stared at me. I couldn't read his expression, but his right hand was slowly clenching and unclenching, as if eager to take up a weapon, and hate poured off him like heat from an oven.
So, I said as nonchalantly as I could, where do you want to do the exchange?
Chapter 38. I walked back up to the house again a few minutes later, Mouse at my side. Michael had been right. Before we went inside, the big dog shook himself thoroughly. I decided to follow his example and stomped whatever snow I could off my numb feet, then went in. I walked into the living room and found everyone there waiting for me. Lucio, Michael, Molly, Sonia, and Murphy. Everyone looked at me expectantly.
He went for it. We're going to have to haul ass in a minute. But I need to speak with you first, Michael.
Michael raised his eyebrows.
Oh, certainly.
Alone, I said quietly. And bring your sword.
I turned and walked on through the house, out the barely functioning back door the Gruff had damaged before all this began, and on to the workshop. I didn't stop to look behind me. I didn't need to look to know that everyone was trading significant glances.
If Nicodemus actually did have people in the treehouse, they were gone now. I wouldn't put it past the bastard to have been lying about them, just to keep me honest. I went inside the workshop and laid my staff down on the workbench. It had a lot of dings and nicks in it. It could benefit from a set of wood carving tools, sandpaper, and patient attention. Michael came in silently a moment later. I turned to face him. He wore his fleece-lined denim coat again, and bore Amorakius in its sheath, attached to a belt he'd slung over one shoulder. I took my duster off and put it next to the staff.
Draw it, please.
Harry, Michael said, what are you doing?
Making a point, I said. Just do it.
He frowned at me, his expression uncertain, but he drew the blade. I added my energy rings to the pile on the workbench, then my shield bracelet. Finally, I took off my mother's silver pentacle necklace and put it down there, too. Then I turned and walked over to Michael. I met his eyes steadily. I had already looked upon Michael's soul. I knew its quality, and he knew that of mine. Then I reached down with my left hand, gently grasped Amorakius's blade, and lifted it to rest against the left side of my neck, just below my ear, the jugular vein, or the carotid artery, I get them confused. Michael went pale.
Harry?
Shut up, I said. For the past couple of days, you've done all kinds of not talking. You can do a little bit more of it until I've said my piece. He subsided, his eyes troubled, and stood very, very still.
What can I say? I have a gift for getting people's attention.
I stared at him down the length of shining, deadly steel, and then, very slowly, took my hand off the sword, leaving its wickedly sharp edge resting against the beat of my life. Then I spread my hands and just stood there for a minute.
You are my friend, Michael, I said, barely louder than a whisper.
I trust you.
His eyes glittered and he closed them.
And you want to know, he said heavily, looking up again.
if I can say the same. Talk is cheap, I said, and moved my chin a little to indicate the sword. I want to know if you'll show me. He lowered the sword carefully from my neck. His hands shook a little, but mine didn't. It isn't that simple. Yes, it is, I told him. I'm your friend or I'm not. You trust me or you don't. He sheathed the sword and turned away, facing the window. That's the real reason you didn't want to hat up and go gunning for the Denarians right at first the way I wanted to. You were worried I was leading you into a trap. I didn't lie to you, Harry, Michael said. But I'd be lying right now if I didn't admit that, yes, the thought had crossed my mind. Why? I asked, my voice perfectly calm. What reason have I ever given you for that? It isn't that simple, Harry. I fought and bled to defend you and your family. I put my neck in a noose for Molly when the council would have killed her. I can't even tell you how much business I've missed out on because of the time I've got to spend teaching her. What was it that tipped you off to my imminent villainhood? Harry. Nicodemus had been right about one thing. It hurt to be suspected by my friends. It hurt like hell. I didn't even realize I had raised my voice until I'd already screamed. Look at me when I'm talking to you! Michael turned his face to me, his expression grim. Do you think I've decided to side with Nicodemus and his buddies? I snarled. Do you really think that? Because if you do, you might as well put that sword through my neck right now. I don't know what to think, Harry, he said quietly. There's a lot you haven't said. I don't share everything with you, I retorted. I don't share everything with anyone. That's nothing new. I know it isn't, he said. Then why? Some of the fire went out of my voice, and I felt like a half-deflated balloon. You've known me for years, man. We've covered each other plenty of times. Why are you doubting me now? Because of Lashiel's shadow, Michael said quietly. Because as long as it's in you, it will tempt you. And the longer it stays, the more able it will be to do so. I gave Fort Hill the coin, I said. I figured that pretty much said it all. Michael grimaced. The shadow can show you how to summon the coin. It's happened before. That's why we're so careful not to touch them. It's over, Michael. There is no more shadow. Michael shook his head, his eyes filled with something very like pity. It doesn't work like that, Harry. The fire came back. The one thing I didn't want or need was pity. I'd made my own choices, lived my own life, and even if they hadn't all been smart choices, there weren't many of them that I'd regretted. How do you know? I asked. Because in 2,000 years, no one has rid themselves of the shadow of one of the fallen, except by accepting the demon into them entirely, taking up the coin, and living to feel remorse and discarding it. And you claim that you never took up the coin. That's right, I said. Then either the shadow is still there, Michael said, still twisting your thoughts, still whispering to you, or you're lying to me about taking up the coin. Those are the only options. I just stared at him for a minute, and I said, Hell's bells. And I thought wizards had a monopoly on arrogance. He blinked. Or do you really expect me to believe that the church has been there to document every single instance of anyone picking up any of those cursed coins? That they followed through with everyone tempted by a fallen shadow, taken testimony, made copies, hell, gotten it notarized? Especially given that you've told me that Nicodemus has worked as hard as he could to destroy the church's records and archives through the years. Michael's weight settled back on his heels. He frowned. This is what they want, Michael. They want us at one another's throats. They want us to distrust one another. I shook my head. And right now is not the time to give it to them. Michael folded his arms, studying me. It could have done something to your mind, Michael said quietly. You might not be in control of yourself, Harry. I took a deep breath. That's possible, I admitted. Anybody's head could be messed with, but if you go rewiring someone's brain, it damages them badly. The bigger the changes you make, the worse it disorders their mind.
the way my daughter did to her friends, Michael said. I know.
So?